This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Samantha Watson. The Kuskokwim Ice Road is closing for the season. The native village of Napaimute Ice Road crew announced yesterday that beginning Friday, April 10th, they will no longer be maintaining it for the 2026 season. Signs and markers are in the process of being removed, and travel by car is at the driver's own risk. The Kuskokwim Ice Road is funded annually by the state. Its maintenance and ice monitoring are carried out by a network of ice road crews and largely organized by the native village of Napaimute's ice road team. This year, the Kuskokwim Ice Road stretched one of its longest ever paths, about 350 miles from Tuntutuliak to Crooked Creek. Maintenance crews hadn't plowed the extra 40-mile stretch downriver to Tuntutuliak since 2020. This year, they opted to expand the road to allow trucks to deliver construction materials for repairs following ex-Typhoon Halong. In the coming weeks, aerial ice monitoring from the National Weather Service will begin as the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta prepares for river breakup. Stay tuned to KYUK for updates. For people in Western Alaska, sea ice can be a road, a workplace, and a risk all at once. Now, researchers are testing a new forecasting tool they hope will help people know when that ice is safe to use. And as KNOM's Ben Townsend tells us, they're asking people in Nome and on St. Lawrence Island for help.
The border between Nome's sandy beaches and the Bering Sea is invisible, covered by feet of frozen water and snow. Throughout the day, crabbers dart across the ice on snow machines, plopping giant metal crab pots into holes. They return every few days to check on their haul. By May, 17 hours of daylight will melt what's left of the sea ice. Big chunks will drift and collide until they're whittled down to nothing. While the sea ice forms in the fall and melts in the spring, crabbers like Katie Hannon say it's crucial to know when the sea ice is safe to travel on.
It's been a challenging season this year. He lost 5 crab pots to that first storm that we had when the ice blew out.
Those pots cost her $200 a piece. Hannon and her husband, Marty Lewis, run a commercial crab business in Nome.
Personally, it's hard for me to go on the ice. I'm afraid of the ice. I'm not as brave as he is.
Hannon holds respect for the ice, knowing it both provides for her family, but also poses a big safety risk.
There were seasons where we've seen people get blown out on the ice with their snow machines and their crab gear.
The sea ice is used by commercial crabbers like Hannon, along with subsistence users and folks just traveling from village to village by snow machine. A new tool hopes to support all users of the sea ice in Western Alaska. The model forecasts 3 days of sea ice movement. Similar models existed before, but they had a resolution of 5 kilometers. That's as wide as Nome's entire waterfront, meaning the shoreline would essentially be just one pixel on the map. The new model improves from 5 kilometers to 1.5, a 3-fold increase in resolution.
The model is already up and running on real-time basis, providing 3-day forecast every day.
That's Ayumi Fujisake Manome, a researcher at the Cooperative Institute for Great Lakes Research, or SIGLR for short. The institute has studied ice movement on the Great Lakes for nearly 2 decades and is applying what it's learned to the Bering Sea. Fujisake Manome says the project is trying to improve both the science behind the forecast and the way that information reaches the public.
It's not just about the design of the model itself, but also how we deliver the information.
The forecast itself is relatively simple. A computer grabs the latest satellite and buoy data, runs a model, and exports an animation to the project's website. And Fujisake Manome says early evaluations show the model is doing pretty good in terms of accuracy. Now the team is focused on improving the user experience. In February, Fujisake Manome and co-researcher John McClure traveled to Gamble and Savunga on St. Lawrence Island to get direct feedback on the tool.
It was a real pleasure just to be able to get out there and actually be talking to people and learning from them. It was a real honor.
McClure says the feedback revealed that a website alone was not enough. Locals told of the many ways sea ice conditions are shared, including VHF radio and social media. The Sigler project is just one of many sea ice products in the region and only has another year of funding. McClure says integrating with another larger and more consistently funded project like the National Weather Service's Alaska Sea Ice Program might be imperative to the tool's survival. Currently, the Weather Service's sea ice forecast product is text only, whereas the Sigler tool is a colorful animated map. The team is hosting another round of community meetings in Nome April 16th and 17th, where more feedback will be collected. In Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
In recent months, Ukrainians in Alaska have been facing delays in getting their immigration documents renewed. Advocates who work with the local Ukrainian community say that's led to at least 100 people leaving the state. As Alonia Nyden reports for the Alaska Desk, the issue has created confusion and chaos for many who are left waiting.
Yelena Dubchenko is with her 4-year-old son Maxim in their Anchorage living room with just 2 suitcases. It's a recent March morning, and they're getting ready for their flight to Seattle. Dubchenko is from Kharkiv, a Ukrainian city close to the country's northeastern border, one of the first places devastated by war after Russia's invasion in 2022. That year, Dubchenko came to Alaska with her husband and son. But last month, she decided to leave the state because she was not sure when her work authorization would be renewed. Speaking in Russian, Dubchenko says she could not afford living in Alaska without a job. She says she feels like her family are hostages of a situation they can't control. They're planning to live with friends in Washington State, where they will have a roof over their heads. Dubchenko is one of at least 100 Ukrainians who have left Alaska in recent months. That's according to the Ukraine Relief Program, which is affiliated with the parish of the New Chance Church in Anchorage. The group helps Ukrainians with housing, employment, and integration. Since the war, around 1,000 Ukrainians have come to Alaska, primarily through 2 federal immigration programs, Uniting for Ukraine and a temporary protected status. Both programs need regular renewals. But last year, many Ukrainians say that those renewals and associated authorizations to work did not come on time. They say this caused more confusion and uncertainty as they try to build a life in Alaska and don't have a safe place to return to. Alaska's senior U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski says many reached out to her office.
If they can't get their work authorization renewed, they can't work, and this causes a real problem, not only for the individuals, but for those who were really counting on that workforce.
Murkowski says Alaska's congressional delegation has jointly signed on to letters urging the federal government to allow Ukrainian refugees to remain in the state. Governor Mike Dunleavy also wrote a letter directly to President Trump asking him to allow Ukrainians to stay and keep working on crucial infrastructure and resource development projects. A spokesperson for Dunleavy's office said that the state has also reached out to the U.S. Department of Labor and the Department of Homeland Security for guidance for Alaska employers with Ukrainian workers waiting for document renewals. In an email response to a list of questions about the visa delays, the DHS press team blamed the Biden administration for expanding humanitarian parole programs for Ukrainians and urged people to self-deport to avoid arrests and deportation. Meanwhile, the war in Ukraine continues. Just this month, a drone attack targeted the city of Odessa in southwestern Ukraine. The attack destroyed an apartment complex and killed several people, including a child. Oksana Bondar is in her Anchorage apartment, showing a photo of the destroyed house in Odessa. It's just around the corner from her former home. She says her friends still living there survived, but lost everything. Bondar says she cried herself to sleep, thinking it could have been her family. Bondar moved to Alaska at the end of 2023. She now works as a teacher assistant in Clatt Elementary School in Anchorage. When the renewal of her legal status and work authorization did not arrive in December, she had to leave work for 2.5 months. She says it was challenging to lose that income and the job she enjoys. Bondar got her documents in February and returned to work. But she says the uncertainty did not end. Her husband is getting a work visa, but his temporary protected status that allows him to work in the meantime is running out in October. It is unclear if that program will be renewed. She says they live out of suitcases. She's 42 and she doesn't have confidence in tomorrow. Bondar says they can't go back because Odessa is under attack and moving to a new country would be really hard. She says it's one thing to restart a life once and another to go through changes constantly. For Dubchenko, who decided to go to Washington with her family, the future remains uncertain as well. She left Alaska in March without even seeing the Northern Lights once. Dubchenko says if her documents aren't renewed in summer, her family will have to leave the country and pack their suitcases again. In Anchorage, I am Alena Naidin.
This is KYUK News. I'm Samantha Watson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yuktun Gnomchit coming up.